canine detection collaborative, a detection dog training trio with Stacey Barnett.
Hi.
Robin Grubel.
Hey there.
And Crystal Wing.
What's up?
With humor and a big dose of theory, our trio talks practical training advice and features interviews with top trainers and scientists.
It's Canine Detection Collaborative!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Canine Detection Collaborative. My name is Robin Grubel, and I am here with my super-duper co-host, Crystal Wing.
Hello, friends.
And a fantastic guest who is the owner of Perfectly Rawsome. And we just had her out for Distraction Camp 2, and I know Crystal and I have used her services for specialty diets or diets for our dogs, actually, in general. And Ronnie Lejeune does all sorts of other things. So we are here to learn more about Ronnie and tell you guys how to connect with her so you can take advantage of some of her great expertise. So Ronnie, why don't you give us like a little snippet, because we're going to ask you lots of questions.
So many questions. I adore you so much.
So I have an alphabet soup myself. Let's just start that I do have a BFA with a concentration in graphic design and a minor in marketing. So I have that.
Bachelor's of Fine Arts, right?
Yes. So I have that. And then I'm also a certified professional dog trainer, a certified canine fitness trainer, and a certified canine nutritionist. I'm also currently in school right now for my advanced canine nutrition degree, hopefully to finish that by the end of the summer. So my business is, I just have two. So that's Perfectly Rawsome, which is
just,
my...
just, no just. You have two businesses.
I have two businesses. So Perfectly Rawsome is our nutrition business where we focus on helping pet parents create home prepared diets for their dogs and cats, whether that's raw, cooked, or a mixed combination type of diet. We suit what you need for your dog's individual requirements. And then I have Optimal Canine, which is my dog training business that I focus really on doing things like obedience, really fun tricks, fitness, sport detection things. So I have those completely separate. But I think what really makes me interesting as a dog trainer is my eye for fitness and how I could take nutrition to harness and make a better athlete for whatever sport we would like to pursue.
Yes.
Oh, so many questions.
So I loved, even when you're here at Distraction Camp, that you noticed like the harness fit, but you noticed just, I'm always kind of a little bit like, okay, you come look at my dog. Like you're just such an expert. And so then I'm like, I don't want to take advantage though, but you're so genius. And I know last year when we met at the first Distraction Camp, I was just enamored with your dog. So what, give me some information about Quest and your little demon. I mean, about Kessel. What brought you to those breeds?
So Quest is my first of the Hunt Point Retrieve breed, and I was on a wait list for him for a significant amount of time. The first litter that I was going to get from ended up being a singleton, so I opted to wait for the next breeding to have more of a puppy that was raised with the full litter. But I pursued the breed because I wanted a sporting breed, but I didn't want specific coat. Like a Labrador, I didn't want the double coat that comes associated with that, and which led me down the road to the pointers, all of the pointers. So I was looking at Vizslas as well as Weimaraners. And ironically, I ruled out Weimaraners for their size, and hindsight, that's really hysterical.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, I wanted a very nice petite little GSP. And of course, I got the biggest out of the litter.
No way.
Yes, he's the largest out of the litter. Imagine that. That's mine. And I ruled out Vizslas because I didn't want the sensitivity that comes with the breed. They're a little bit more sensitive than what you'd expect from a Weimaraner and a GSP.
How much does Quest weigh?
75 pounds, but he's 27 inches at the withers. For
he's just thick. Like
wise.
He's just muscle and
small Appaloosa.
Yeah. There's a reason we call him Pony.
He's a big dog. And I've also realized with him, I'm at max capacity at that size. I do not want a dog any larger than that. It's not kind to my body.
Most dogs don't come bigger than that. So you're okay.
I mean, you at least sport performance dogs, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, you've guys seen me tug with him. My shoulders are out there fighting for their lives.
I love that photo you just shared. I was dying.
And I absolutely fell in love with the breed. It was my first breed. I mean, dog of that breed. And I'm sold. GSP fan for life now. I love the versatility that the breed gives me, as well as not only just in sports, but in just an active lifestyle. Cause we could go hiking, we could go paddleboarding, and that fulfills his cup just as much as sports does. So I like that ability. Like if I don't really feel like training him, I still could go do something that gives me decompression as well as fulfill his requirements. Absolutely love that about him.
Did you get him for nose work then? Was that one of the purposes?
Not nose work in particular. Ironically, I was looking into doing blood tracking until I realized blood tracking, they do that in the middle of the night. And I realized quickly, like, that's not going to happen with my lifestyle. So that's when I got into AKC footstep tracking with him. I did that first. So I started with him at 16 weeks old. And I think that really also helped develop a really good, stable GSP because I was fulfilling his nose requirements at a very young age. And then that's whenever I ended up finding Stacy, and he was around a year old because I was really particular about my detection trainer because my previous dog, Two Quest, which was my first American bully, who is no longer with us. His name is Loki.
Aww.
I did sit detection with him and I had some problems because of the previous instruction I had received. And I kind of just abandoned pursuing it any further with him because I was like, I'm getting a pointer. I'm going to do it with him. Figure that out. So ended up finding Stacy, and pretty much fast forward, this is where we are now with Quest. The reason why we got Kessel is because we lost Loki. So Loki, being an American bully, is the bully breed type. And myself and my husband are a big fan of the breed, just their general temperament. They're very different than a pointer. Very different. Different prey drive, different motivation. But what's really nice about him in comparison to Quest is Kessel is a very much like, he's a cuddly dog and he doesn't have the high energy requirements as Quest does. So there's a good balance there. Quest is not very touchy feely. He's high energy. Also, I mean, both my dogs are high drive, but Kessel, not so high energy. I could fulfill his cup quite easily. And he'll just hang out with me on the couch. And I absolutely love that about Loki because he was one of those dogs we could exercise him a decent, not an excessive amount. And he was content with just hanging out on the couch with us and wanted to wear us as a skin suit. So losing a dog that you had that type of connection with, the house felt quite empty.
Yeah.
And I had contacted a breeder when I was looking for my first performance dog when I was undecided on breeds. So an AST was on the list along with a pointer. And I was just contacting breeders at that point. And the breeder ended up contacting me and saying, hey, I have this breeding. Would you be interested? And it wasn't the perfect timing, but it was the perfect breeding on what I was looking for. So I was like, absolutely. And we got Kessel. He ended up being the only male out of the litter. And that's what I wanted. So that worked out for me. And then we got our spicy redhead.
Spicy.
Yeah, he's spicy. He's very true to the breed standard, if anyone is curious. So he definitely has tendencies towards arousal issues. And that's really kind of what I'm focusing on with him right now, with his being intact and adolescent. Just 13 months old right now.
Lots of feelings.
But that's also where I think your strength comes in as a trainer, because you have the high drive dogs, you have the different kind of temperaments, the different kind of needs, and you can really see that it's developed you as such an amazing trainer. I love watching you interact with your dogs. Your reinforcement systems are out of this world. Every time you come, I'm like, yeah, girl, I can't wait.
Oh my
to
gosh.
Watch.
Watching the reinforcement and how it cues up and leads you, the dog's arousal, to the right spot so that they can go to work.
You're amazing.
Yeah. I sit there and watch it. And I'm like, I can't remember my name most days.
No, but for real, it's masterful. Like watching you get your dogs ready and having the right kind of, it was just, every time you got up, I know whoever was like before or after you was always like, I remember, oh, I think it was Linda or there were a couple of people that were saying, they were like, I'm so glad I'm not after Ronnie.
Oh, that's a shame because I thought everyone did great.
They did.
Oh, they did. Yeah. Just when there's that star that's like, yeah, that's
Quest is excellent. I love him. He's an exceptional star. I mean, of course, in part to the amount of hours I've put into him.
Yeah. But something you said, though, it's not just the time you put into him, but the education you've put in and the way that you are fulfilling yes. their needs. And right. that's the thing that makes it so special. And that's, I think, why people love watching you train so much and why you're such a fantastic trainer. Is that key right there, you know, your dogs, that relationship, but then you also know what they need. And that's, right. oh, it's beautiful.
Because I couldn't live with these dogs otherwise. Like,
yeah.
there would be no way I would want to pull my hair out. They would turn into very exotic rugs. So for Kessel right now, we're very much focused on understanding his, like, I'm still trying to understand really what tips him off. And because he'll have some handler directed aggression when he gets over aroused and it hurts. It's not enjoyable. So trying to really get him to work through that. And of course, adolescence makes that difficult because the sports stuff comes after, in my opinion. I need to live with these dogs. So having those foundations and making sure I could understand how to fulfill their needs to make sure that they are happy and fulfilled. That's priority number one for me because doing the scent stuff is easy. And that's the easy stuff, in my opinion.
Okay. So that gives me this. Foundations. What are your foundations for these dogs that have all these needs? And like, if could you limit it down and just kind of give the viewer or the viewers, the listeners, please don't view.
No viewing. We recorded this early in the morning and I haven't had enough coffee.
And I kept saying, I got to get the frog out of my throat. So what are those foundation behaviors that are so important? Because you do a beautiful job of those.
So I think it's different for each dog because obviously they're just radically different dogs.
Right.
For Quest, without a doubt, it's not even a foundation behavior. It's just a requirement. He needs to run. This is a dog that I cannot live with if he does not have the ability to get off of a leash and just go. So allowing him to have that freedom obviously becomes my priority is recall. And I have several forms of recall. And that's mostly because it depends on how I want to use it, like my outcome of what I want the dog to do. Some of are terminal, some are continuous, like we're going to go this way and I change my position. So like directional casting. So my dog technically comes to me if he's way out proximity wise. So I think that's very important for him. And also I need engagement from Quest. That, I mean, I could say every dog needs engagement and relationship with their owner, but Quest as a point retrieve dog, handler focus and engagement is at the bottom of his list. He could give a damn that I exist because the world is a lot more important to him. So I had to spend a significant amount of time just being able to exist in grass and my dog acknowledge that I'm at the end of the leash.
Yeah.
Because without that, I can't have anything else. And if you've ever experienced living with a pointer or just being around a pointer that doesn't have engagement, it feels like you're fighting against fire. It's almost impossible sometimes. So recall and engagement for him, I think that's important. Everything else, that's simple, right? At least in my viewpoints, because I could teach my dog to do everything at that point. Kessel, right now where we're at with him, is getting him to understand how to control his arousal and make better choices when he's having violent thoughts. So when he's feeling a spike of arousal, and that could be excitement or frustration, he wants the handler redirect onto me. So right now our focus is one, I need to prevent him from ever getting into that headspace, but sometimes that's almost impossible. And I want him to understand if you feel like that, please redirect onto a toy versus me. So we've built in, and I spent a significant amount of time on teaching him how to hold a toy and I've generalized it to a significant amount of items. So it's served now as an incompatible behavior when he's around things that give him big feelings. Because if I could plug the face hole, everything else to be more controlled. He does tend to be a bully and body check things, but the teeth are focused on holding the thing in the mouth. And that's that is so important to me right now.
Yeah.
Now it's created other issues for me, but that will work through it. So he's become incredibly possessive over it and suspicious of me in those contexts. Like he suspects me to steal it from him, which I've never done that before, but because I've always encouraged, it's yours, no one's going to take it. But now he's like, are you going to take it? Mm-hmm. But are you? Adolescence is something, right? So we're working through those feelings. But in hindsight, I much prefer having those thoughts than I want to bite everything thoughts.
Yes.
So for him, that's really priority because he came with handler focus, because the breed type, they're typically very handler focused. Of course, he's a terrier, so he has a significant amount of prey drive, but it's not what I expect on a hunt point retrieve dog like Quest, who is genetically bred to range away and hunt independently in acres, right? Whereas Kessel is meant to work alongside with the human in terms of their predatory action sequence.
Do you think he'd make a good nose work dog?
Yes. I don't think he'll be as exceptional as Quest.
Yeah.
That's a hard bar to live up to, in my opinion. But he's shown me when we were at distraction camp, he lost his toy in medium grass, not super long. I could still visually see it. And I told him, go get your toy. And he was actively trying.
Nice.
He's never found it, but
he was hunting.
Yes, the effort and the drive was there. So I was like, wow, okay, that's in you. That's cool. Now, he does barn hunt, and he very much loves barn hunt.
Good.
To the point where he's going to be one of those dogs that I have to pull him off the tube and the rat wrangler has to get the tube kind of situation. Like he's attacking the tubes. He's a hard hitter. So yes, he very much likes the hunt. But I think for him, it's more getting to the end of the hunt is what he's enjoying, the dissection and the kill bite portion. So
yeah.
I have a 10-year-old border collie who gets to do rat barn hunt for real because we live on a farm. And we very much hit the stage when we were doing competition level stuff that I could see it coming out that he was going to get disqualified for harassing the rat if I didn't get there fast enough.
Yes.
So I get it. Yes.
So that's how it is with Kessel. That's right now. That could very much change because he's still developing, right? His personality is coming out. We're still learning each other as a team, but he's very much a fun dog so far. I do enjoy him.
I appreciate the fact that you're looking at him and you are saying you're a teenager.
Yes.
And allowing the time for you guys to get to know each other, to put all those foundations on and really move at his pace instead of pushing. It's lovely. And that's a huge thing for me. I was watching you do stuff with Kessel and I was like, Flash is coming up on 8 months old. We have a lot of time together.
I've compared and that's him in the background. If you hear the noises, that he's big dreaming right now. So I've compared I know you're not supposed to compare your dogs, but I've looked at where Quest was at that age and where Kessel is at this age. And Quest had significantly more titles than Kessel just has a CGC right now. And I'm completely okay with that.
Oh, you mean just?
I'm sorry. He has a CGC.
Oh, okay. Good. Love you.
We're horrible humans. We're trying to abolish the word just.
I mean, because CGC is really hard for a lot of people and a lot of dogs. I mean, it.
Right.
So
it is. And we got it pretty young. He was around 7 months
which
old.
Which is really smart to do. Just a little pro tip there.
Right. Because now I could guarantee it probably wouldn't be as successful, especially in middle adolescence.
Yes, I waited until almost 2 for Radish when she was like, I must see everybody. Okay.
Whereas Quest at this age had significant, like, novice level titles in Barn Hunt. He had his Doc novice title. He had his Scent Work novice title at this, and a few trick titles. Kessel, it's CGC. And that's fine. I'm completely okay with that because my struggles with them are completely different.
So I'm curious about your path, because you go from being an artist, which you're amazing at, by the way. Yeah, you should share more because your art is amazing. I mean, I'm a high school art teacher, so there's that. But I love, like, when we chat back and forth and you're sending progress photos, that makes me so incredibly happy because it's, yeah, just fills my cup. But I'm curious, what came first, the fitness or the nutrition?
The nutrition, because of my past dog, Loki. Basically, I attribute everything that I am today because of this dog. We got him, he was our second dog because we still have our first dog, which is my border collie. He doesn't get much spotlight. He's soon to be 15. Our old geriatric old man, Pika is his name. And he was our first dog. And of course, everyone starts somewhere. I fed my dog Pro Plan. He did great on it. Got my second dog, which was Loki, the American Bully. Put him on the same food. Did absolutely terrible on it. Switched onto different foods. Like, I just went through that process trying to find a dry food that my dog could live off of, because liquid
function.
Stools.
Yeah.
Right. Well, just like liquid stools shouldn't be normalized, even if it's soft serve. Like, that's just not okay in my viewpoint, regardless of the diet that's fed. So I went through that process trying to find the right food, and I never did. And at that time, I stumbled upon Yahoo groups for raw feeding when that was a thing.
And, oh my gosh.
Right. And I just was like, it's a Hail Mary. I'm going to just try, because right now my dog's suffering between losing fur because he was having dermatitis issues and the gastro issues in and out of the vet with bloody diarrhea. So I switched him. Hindsight, what I fed him then was not balanced, but I saw dramatic change in my dog within 4 weeks. And I was like, that's it. I'm sold. And switched my dogs over. And at that point, I needed to learn how to do this correctly. Pushed myself to get into school to educate myself on that, because I felt like that's very important to me. So I went to the Companion Animal Science Institute to get my canine nutrition certification. Perfectly Rawsome was established in 2015. And I started it then just as a blog because of what I was learning. I was having people just ask me how to feed raw because they were seeing what I was doing with my dogs. And the easiest thing for me at that time was to make a website, because that's what I was doing as my career at that time. I was a website designer and developer. So I had the skills. I was just going to make the website and design all my things and get Perfectly Rawsome started. Then I filed for my LLC, got my certification, and started offering my services. So you could see how that kind of like domino effect at that point.
So that says a lot then, because your blog and the stuff you give away for free on your website is unbelievable. I couldn't believe it when I went there when we first met a year ago. And actually, I had found your website before that, not even knowing you. And then it was also cool because at Distraction Camp 1, people were talking and then someone said, well, yeah, Ronnie's the food guru. And I was, because you were so quiet. You're so like low key about everything. And I think somebody was talking about food and you were just sitting there listening. And then you kind of came and you said something to me about helping me with my dogs. And you changed my world. Like, you absolutely changed my world, because Checkmate was skin and bones and Radish was skin and bones. And I couldn't get weight on them. And I had switched to raw like you did, where it was out of necessity. But poor Quinn had UTIs all the time, could not figure it out. And again, it wasn't balanced. It was chicken thigh, chicken leg quarters. But he quit having UTIs and he started gaining weight and he started getting muscle. And it was like, I got to learn about this. And it was like barf and 80, 10, 10 and all these things. And it was so overwhelming. I had no idea there was a school out there. And then fast forward to meeting you and how you changed my dog's life. So that's, I appreciate you so much. So I had to put that out there just publicly.
So the website has blossomed into a significant resource. There's at least over 100 articles there, free articles. We're now publishing paid articles for the more advanced topics. But yeah, it's a labor of love.
You give away so much for free.
You do. And keep in mind that the website will be in the show notes so you can reach out.
Yeah.
And it was, I know I reached out to you to help not augment a formula right? For Flair, when she was gestating all of her little puppies, because I don't have the bandwidth. I would love to feed raw, but I don't feel like I have the mental bandwidth to be able to do it. Plus, I have a whole deployment factor that goes on in my background of I might get a phone call and I need to be able to throw a bag of food in the car and we need to go and be gone for 10 days. And it was so nice. I remember going through the whole conversation where you're like, no, you can't feed that one because it's not all life stages. You can't feed that one. Pick one. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then you're like, these are perfectly fine, Robin, but not for gestation. And pick what you're going to feed. And then I'll give you the stuff to go with it. And wow, you hit the easy button on that one.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah, because I was looking at it from your perspective. You're feeding multiple dogs of different life stages. It makes no sense to have adult formula and puppy formula and those types of things. If I know you're on top of that, you have your training and then your farm. So
yeah,
it just consolidation is important for a lot of my clients like that.
And you nailed it right there. You absolutely look at not only the individual dog, but the human too. And
the lifestyle that goes along.
Yes, everything, the whole picture. I never thought I would ever find someone like you that can really reach out and know and look at every aspect in such a holistic way. It's impressive what you do. It's such,
Well, and the questions, your little questionnaire, you're like, I remember filling out the questionnaire and I'm like, I don't care. Just tell me what to do.
Because that's also part of the person, you know?
Right. Just tell me what to do. I don't care. And then here's me. Can you tell me exactly what to order off of Amazon so I don't order the wrong thing?
And you did. You did. You provided everything. I'm like, dude, it can't be any easier. Like, you've done everything. I'm so thankful for you.
So
yeah, working with the people component came from my web design background.
Yeah.
Because the service that I was previously offering before I made this huge career shift was also quite revolutionary for the industry at the time. We called it the day site. It has now been bought out and changed, rebranded or whatever. But essentially you would, as a company, you could book me for 8 hours and you sit down with me and we build your website in a day. And I teach you how to manage your website in a day. Obviously there's pre-planning and things that go behind the scenes, but that was the whole process. And of course I'm a designer and a developer. So it's not like you're just getting a haphazard website thrown together. You actually leave with a finished product and you would know how to adjust it, manage your content, et cetera. So coming from that background, working with people literally side by side and teaching them how to manipulate this technology, I think gave me a lot of skills to be able to look into how to pivot even in dog training, because you're dealing with people of different skill sets making their website. You get someone that's incredibly technically savvy and then someone that has never turned on a computer before. So that I think gave me like an incredible perspective on how to adjust for not only the dog, because that's the nutritional component that I'm educated on, but looking at the human component of it.
So if I'm on deployment with Nico, who I don't know where I might be, right? Or I know that I'm getting ready to go out and do something with, let's give advice right on the spot. What are some supplements that I should take with me or have him or have the put the dogs on like the day before a competition? Or if I'm going out on, we're going to go out and search the amusement park or something. Is there something I should like put in their diet the day before or have with me that is a good idea for performance and keeping them where they need to be?
And that's been huge on my mind too, because of adding more nose time, like doing all day searching with Radish now, kind of amping it up for certification. I'm like, ooh, am I doing the things right? Because I do see her being a little bit sore. And so then I'm like, oh, you know, should I? Yeah. So that, thank you for asking that, Robin.
In terms of increasing performance, my answer to that is making sure the diet is formulated for the ideal performance versus trying to throw the kitchen sink the night before, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So if we feed for optimal performance, like when we add the right gas to the right car, we get the best performance. So that's the same thing with our dogs. We would want to make sure that the diet is formulated for whatever we're needing to do. The things that I would say in terms of travel to be more mindful of is stuff that you could add to the food on an as-needed basis based off of things that may occur. Gastrointestinal stress based off of anxiety or just frustration, stress in general could cause loose stools. So bringing digestive enzymes and probiotics is always a great idea because you could have that on hand if you're starting to see those signs, and that's going to be a very beneficial thing to take. Fibrous foods, things like green beans, oatmeal, sweet potato, pumpkin are also things that you can add into the food if your dog has loose stools, because that fiber, you want soluble fiber, because what that does is it absorbs moisture. So when the dog has loose stools, we want soluble fiber to absorb to help correct the consistency of that stool.
Do I have a pill I can throw in? Because I don't know if I can find sweet potatoes on deployment.
So that's what I was going to say.
Okay, sorry.
And they have canned pumpkin. So if that's something you're planning, you could have, I tell all of my clients to always have something like that on their reserve. So if you get a call, you have to deploy, you grab your dog's food, and then you have your dog's emergency supplement ration, which would be a canned pumpkin, probiotics, and digestive enzymes off to the side to add, bring with you with the dry dog food in case you would need it.
I was just thinking, there's canned sweet potatoes, right? Or is that something different?
I think it's just canned pumpkin. Another thing you can do is they do, if you have access to a microwave when you go to certain areas for deployment, because if you're staying in a motel or something like that, you could get the single serving sizes of oatmeal, just plain oatmeal.
Okay.
That you could microwave, and plain white rice is also another. So those are all shelf stable, so you wouldn't have to worry about refrigerator, ice, etc. Is what I typically recommend for my clients that are going into like the wilderness and they could come back to somewhat of a civilization to use a microwave or something of that sort.
Or even if you get the instant stuff that you just add hot water.
Right, like the canned pumpkin is one. You could get, there is dehydrated pumpkin on Amazon. I think the brand is Food to Live. I would have to double check. But it is a 2-pound bag of just pumpkin powder. And all you would have to do is rehydrate it with hot water.
Oh, nice.
So that's another option if you do not want to get like the canned stuff and deal with the microwave.
Going to actually put that on my list of
now,
shopping.
Does pumpkin work both ways? Like if they're constipated and if they're loose?
Yes. Because that's what soluble fiber does. It helps things move through. Now, it's more insoluble fiber. If your dog is incredibly constipated, you're going to want more roughage and insoluble fiber. So pumpkin has both, but it's more on the soluble fiber side, where insoluble fiber is more of like roughage. So you would want to think of things like seeds, like pumpkin seeds ground up, almonds ground up, or the skin of an apple, skin of potatoes, because those aren't digested very well. They're going to come out like roughage, or grated raw carrot, grated beets. When you start to get into vegetables and things that are cooked, so like the cooked sweet potato or the cooked carrot, that becomes digestible in terms of what the body enzymatically could do to those ingredients. That just starts to get into really nerdy nutrition stuff. So that's how you could get insoluble fiber if you're experiencing a constipation issue. However, I don't really experience that when traveling because it's normally the opposite end. Dogs are getting stress diarrhea.
But now you get me thinking, I eat a lot of carrots. And whenever I peel the carrots, I always let them have all the carrot skins. So what am I doing to my dogs when I do that?
Nothing. It's just fiber.
Okay. Because their stool is fine, but then I'm like, what am I doing to them?
No, it's just, fiber is all great within moderation.
Okay. Yeah.
And just the peelings of carrots, that's completely fine.
Okay, good. Because they like them and I give them to them and I eat a lot. So just side note. So for your lower arousal weekend warrior types, we kind of talked about the deployment types. Is there something that you suggest for them?
So just like if we're going traveling for camping or hiking, give me a scenario.
I'm just thinking for our detection dogs that are
sport performance, perhaps?
Yeah, sport performance and...
The same thing, really, honestly. Probiotics, digestive enzymes, and a fiber source. Now, if it's our sport detection teams, we generally have more access to grocery stores. So our availability is a little bit more at our reach. So in my opinion, that at that point, you could get the steamable vegetables from the freezer section. And you could get like the cube sweet potato. So it's already cut up for you. All you have to do is throw it in the microwave, steam it, feed it to your dog. You could get green beans, etc. Still the same other options still apply if you want to be able to purchase them and have them on hand, like the shelf-stable canned pumpkin, the dried pumpkin, because then you could always just have it on hand and take it as needed versus, oh no, it's an emergency. I need to go to the store because my dog's stools are loose for sweet potatoes, et cetera.
I did forget one thing. Back to the deployment dogs that are on long things and even the nose work dogs that are on long weekends of lots of searching, you know, I'm thinking like summit level is, I'm thinking like, are there electrolyte things or when do you start considering that?
Technically, dogs do not lose electrolytes like humans do to an extent. So we know that magnesium and potassium, which are the two major electrolytes, are lost in the urine and panting when there's excessive urine and panting. And we could experience that in our detection dogs that are out for long deployment and doing a lot of nose time and they're hot and having to consume a lot of water because more water consumption means more urination. So in those situations, because of the dehydration state, we could easily assume that magnesium and potassium can be lowered if the dog is not well hydrated. So my go-to is to make sure, like, is the dog drinking? Can we confirm that this dog is drinking? And what we see with detection dogs is no, they're not drinking.
Yeah, you have to make them.
Yes.
Yeah, it needs to almost be on cue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So in a perfect world, if the detection dog is well hydrating themselves without being so hyper-focused on work, I generally am not concerned with electrolytes because the dog is well hydrated, but that's a perfect world. And most of our working dogs are not doing this. Even my Quest, I have to cue him to drink. And sometimes he will lay down by the bowl and he's like, I prefer not to. I know what you want me to do, but I prefer not to.
Or the obligatory lick.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Or he'll shove his nose in it. That's it.
Uh-huh. Like, yes.
Scuba diving.
Yes.
So in situations, I feel like you can use an electrolyte type of liquid to bait the water, which will also get the dog to start consuming more fluids.
Okay.
My go-to is coconut water because it is loaded with potassium and magnesium. It's a whole food. It's cheap. It's shelf stable because you don't have to keep it in the refrigerator. So it works great for detection teams that do not need to have the cooler ice factor.
I'm adding that right now. Thank you.
Yeah. The other option is bone broth. You could home prepare your own bone broth, but there are some companies out there that make bone broth powder. So it is a little on the pricier side in comparison to the other options, but the powder is also shelf stable. You don't have the weight of it. That's a pro to that. You don't have to carry the weight of water, coconut water to bone broth powder, and you just add the powder to the water. So you're baiting it the same way. Of course, regular bone broth, if you make it yourself for like our sport detection teams that are just competing and they have access to a refrigerator, you can make your own and have it in the refrigerator. That's just something that needs to stay cooled because it's not shelf stable unless you're canning it. And then that's a whole nother discussion. But that's what I would do in terms of electrolytes. I really don't go far into getting like an electrolyte supplement because if I could ensure that the diet is formulated for optimal performance. So we check all the markers there for the sport or the work that the dog's doing. And then we also make sure that the dog's well hydrated. If the dog is not staying well hydrated, that's when we start using something like coconut water or the bone broth to encourage more water consumption. And it also, those things include electrolytes in itself. So that's how I approach that topic versus going out on the market and buying X dog supplement for all these electrolytes because they have 5,000 ones on the market for the same thing. Like they have electrolyte pastes and all these other things.
And I just bought an updated water thing just a couple days ago, and it has a little thing underneath to put kibble in. And I'm like, I'm not going to put kibble in that. So now I'm putting bone broth powder in there. I love it. So I can just sprinkle that into the water. So now I'm like, I'm so excited about that little container I just bought, because it's just a little thing on the bottom. This is perfect.
Yes.
Awesome.
It was just meant to be.
Well, we were having the discussion. Well, what do I put in there? And I was like, I don't know. So
I guess I'll put some matches or something. I don't know. Put something in there that's, you know, because I know I keep it dry. Oh, speaking of keeping it dry, I know our intern Jenny just had a little snafu with her food. It all got moldy. Do you have suggestions on how to store food?
Dry food?
Yes.
Okay. So dry food, you're going to want to do an airtight container. There's the safe lock. Now, there's things that we have to be mindful of with safe locks as well. The ambient temperature that we put the container in is also important. So if we take those safe locks and put them in a hot environment, it's going to heat up the inside. And if we're constantly opening and closing, we're introducing more moisture, bacteria, et cetera. And it just becomes like its own little microclimate. And that's where you could get things to fester. So you want to store it in a good climate controlled environment within the safe lock. Now, the food that's in the safe lock, I generally say to only put 4 weeks of food that you're going to use, because otherwise the food will start to oxidize. And that's a whole different problem outside of mold.
Does that happen if you leave it in its original bag?
Yes. So what I would recommend is if you open the original bag and you take out what you need for 4 weeks, take that bag, roll it up, tape it with duct tape, put it in the freezer.
Okay. Because I was thinking about all of the bags of food that I have stored in my basement.
As long as they're not open. So they're fine. They're closed, they're fine. The minute you open the bag is when the process starts.
Got it. Yeah, I go.
I know the amount of dogs you go through, that's going to go fast.
Yeah.
But as the moment you open it is where that process starts. So if you're someone that gets one of those 30-pound bags and you do not go through a 30-pound bag within 4 weeks, I would take out the quantity you would need, put that 4 week quantity into the safe lock that's in a climate controlled environment, and then roll up that bag, duct tape it really good together, and put that in a freezer. So that's nice and stored so that we could minimize oxidization in the remaining of that open bag. Another thing is when you're adding new food into an empty safe lock, I always recommend washing it like it's your own dishes. So it needs to get a good sanitize before we add in more food.
I'm doing a lot of things wrong.
Well, it's one of those things. I'm thinking about that and I'm like, nobody ever tells you these things.
They don't.
Well, I'm sitting here thinking, I've been here all summer at Wayward Dog Home with my, whatever that container is that I have, like the little, is that a safe lock that I have? I don't even know. It's like a spinny lid on a white square thing.
That's those safe locks. Yeah.
Okay. And it's been sitting in the handler quarter garage all summer.
Yeah. I'd move it inside if possible.
Yeah. So is this dumb? I put silica packs in with it.
That's fine, but that's going to help with moisture, but it's not helping with the ambient heat that occurs around it.
I mean, it only got to 110 a couple times.
Only.
Okay, so along with all of the diet stuff that you do, you have the canine fitness side as well.
I do. So Optimal Canine.
What's Optimal Canine do?
Optimal Canine, so that's my dog training business, where I really just focus on obedience, fitness, and any sports work. I take low level behavior cases, and that would go through a full assessment with me. And if that case would not fit within what I want to work with, I take my full assessment and I give them a referral to a trainer that I know would be suitable for them. And that's just simply because I no longer have the spoons to deal with severe aggression, reactivity. When there's other people out in this world that they focus on, they can help those clients. So I will do things like just regular obedience, whether that's just for house manners existing in the world, or actually training for a competition. And I will do detection, so that any nose work or tracking. Barn hunt, if people want me to help them. I do not own rats, but so if I travel to our facility out in North Louisiana, which I'm the secretary for the Barn Hunt Club there, I could help. I help train out there if they need me. And then I have my actual fitness program. So you could hire me to develop a custom fitness program for your dog, whatever those goals may be, to help identify any weak points, build condition in terms of strength and body awareness and endurance for whatever sport the dog is doing. I also do workshops in Louisiana for actual fitness. So I've done some at our Barn Hunt facility for a full weekend where we had people come in and we did some foundations for fitness in that. And outside of that, oh yeah, and I'm working on online courses for Optimal Canine. So that's something that I'm getting started on because a lot of my clients as of recent are more virtual based. So I'm getting people from across the country versus a lot of locally in the state. So I want to start offering some deep dive courses on very specific topics that people struggle with because it's, in my opinion, the format for some of these courses are better than hiring me for private lessons. So for an example, the first course I'm working on is a deep dive into leash walking because major problem across the board, whether you're working the sport or pet home, everyone struggles with leash walking.
Preach. Even I struggle with leash walking. So yeah.
So I'm that's currently my focus right there is getting a really in-depth program, a class course for that going. So that's been my hyper focus for Optimal Canine as of now, outside of just my virtual lessons and things of that nature.
I don't know how you do it all.
I don't either, honestly.
Because you have your little virtual office where like, hey, Ronnie, let's do a podcast. She's like, yep, no problem. Okay.
Yeah, because you're in Michigan right now and you just came from distraction camp in Iowa and you're an impressive human.
Yes. So you're working on all of the basic foundational stuff with Kessel. And what all are you doing with Quest? Because you started talking about, well, we do this and we do this. And I'm like, okay, I want the all of the things that you are playing in with Quest.
Okay. So I feel like Quest is... he's my jack of all trades dog. I feel like he could do anything I put him to. He's phenomenal. So non-sport things, we go paddleboarding, we go hiking, and then, which is pretty typical, right? But we do this a lot.
Typical. Yeah. a lot of people don't paddleboard with their horse. I mean, they're a 70-pound GSP.
Yeah, on the front,
that's,
on their paddleboard.
That's not typical. I'm just going to put that out there, Ronnie. It's
my,
sorry.
My seahorse, right? So, but we do that pretty frequently. And like I said, that goes back into, I have to give this dog off leash time. So it's kind of gotten to a point where it's gotten me in a habit to do it. And I absolutely love it. So it gives me, fills my cup, fills his cup. Also it fills Kessel's cup up, but he doesn't have the stamina to keep up with it. So I got to cut him short.
Well, he also, he can't do the whole swimming thing. He has no body fat. He's like a rock.
Yes, that's why he mostly wears a life jacket. So that's our what we do that's outside of sports. So, but for Quest, the sports we do are AKC tracking. We do detection for AKC and NACSW. We finally got an ORT in Louisiana. So we're starting to get trials for NACSW out down south. So that's exciting. Horn hunt, duck diving. And that's really it in terms of sports. Of course, he's my demo dog in terms of virtually anything I need to teach and with my clients. We've dabbled in gun dog stuff, but I'm not pursuing it just simply because obviously I don't have all the time in the world to go that far. But in terms of his skills, he would be able to pass a junior hunter of a retriever test for marked retrieves, both in land and water. I'm pretty confident he'd be able to do that. So that's pretty cool to be able to do things across the board with him in very different disciplines.
Well, it's fun to look at the cross training stuff, right? Mm-hmm. On how all of that works.
And the gun dog foundations are so important.
Yeah, I get a lot of things from different sports that help me in whatever I'm working on. Because I really feel like tracking has helped Quest in terms of detection because we started tracking before detection. There was times when we started detection work when he was learning odor, I actually started noticing he was starting to track where I would walk. So it got to a point where like, now I just got to walk in circles and everywhere so I can trip him that you don't know where I've been. So the dog's going to use the tools that are easy for them, right? So that's what we're doing. But since we've got Kessel and he's going to be doing a little bit of different sports, I'm considering dabbling a few with Quest because he just, he takes to everything that I give him. So an example is, at 8 weeks old, Kessel climbed over the backside of our couch, which is about 4 feet tall. And he was a 6-pound puppy. He just climbed over it. And the pit bull community, there's a wall climb, which is a sport. So 90-degree wall, climb up, grab a toy, and they belay the dog down. And I was like, well, that's what we're going to be doing with the little redhead, because at 8 weeks old, you're doing it just for no reason. And I recently on TikTok, on my For You page, had a German short hair pointer doing wall climb. And I was like, that's it. I'm sold. I'm doing it.
How do you safely have them land? Like if they miss the toy?
They're on a belay system.
Okay.
So the dog has to wear a 3-point harness.
Ah.
And the dog is tethered to a belay up.
Okay.
And also the toy is harnessed up. So when the dog runs up, someone's belaying to pull in the tension, and then they drop the dog down slowly. But generally they have someone there to catch. I will not be a catcher for Quest. So I will require a very safe belay system. And I've also seen a few other trainers, they do the belay as well as they belay down the toy. So like if you get a dog that has a good bite hold, you have 2 belays on down.
Nice.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, something else to figure out all the fitness for to do that, huh?
Yes, because I've seen some terrifying videos of wall climb. And it's, I would say in terms of training, it's probably a training issue on how they built the foundations as well as the dog's fitness level. So we all know the wall is a 90-degree from the ground, right? It's perpendicular, and the dog has to jump and propel up. And I've seen dogs literally slam straight into it versus
going up. That's so common. Yes, they don't teach it.
Mm-hmm. And that is like, that's just screaming medial shoulder problems, all kinds of crazy spinal injuries. And it could be very bad if it's not trained appropriately, or the dog doesn't have the appropriate striding to understand how to place its feet.
Okay.
Which is similar, I think, in our sport with Palisade.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty similar to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm also thinking now, I've had shoulder injuries and I can't do rock climbing anymore. And so now I'm like, the whole belay system, I could do this with my dogs now. So thanks, Ronnie. They could fulfill my little rock climbing needs. And
okay. So give us a like Cliff Notes version of how you should appropriately fit a harness and the type of harness you should buy.
Ideally.
I know that that was like, I know.
I could tell you bullet points. Ideally, we want a Y front. There's 2 different fronts. There's a front that it looks like it goes straight across. So it just looks like a straight line. And then there is one that looks like a T, which is a straight line, but then there's a strap that goes across the sternum and towards the back of the chest, right? And then there's a Y, which means the top part angles around the neck. And then there's the piece that goes down the sternum. You want a Y front. And that's because we want it to avoid the shoulders entirely. So you don't want it crossing the scapula. So that's important. So you want it sitting right above the scapula, but not too high to where it starts to get onto the trachea. So like there's a sweet spot there you have to fit. And that's really dependent on the dog. So not every harness with a Y front is going to give the same fit. So putting that harness on the dog to see how it falls on their shoulders is important. The strap that goes behind the front limbs ideally should at least be 1.5 inches away from the armpit. Because you'll see there will be a strap and it's literally in the armpit. And that's one, going to cause shoulder problems in terms of soreness, but it's going to cause chafing. So you want it to have some space there. And that's going to give you some clearance, not only from the chafing, but it's not going to be on the bottom of the shoulder. Outside of that, the fit should ideally be the same. You should be able to fit 2 fingers underneath the strapping. So you want it nice and fitted, but fitting fingers underneath is still important because too tight is also a problem. And it's also uncomfortable. If you want a third strap harness, because I know some people use third strap, whether it's a tactical harness, flag line, webmaster, et cetera, et cetera. That third strap ideally should be behind the rib cage if you want it to function as a harness the dog cannot back out of. So I know a lot of people with sighthounds need that. Yeah. So that third strap must be behind the rib cage because then it's physically impossible for them to back out of the harness at that point because their waist is smaller than their rib cage. Tactical harness, depending on the style of the horn, the third strap. Some of them fall on the last rib, some of them fall behind. So it really just depends on the style. But if it's, like I said, if it's the one that falls behind the ribs, we want to make sure it's tightened enough to where we don't have, it will slide back and forth onto the rib cage itself. So that's the best points to take away for a harness, to find one that is appropriately fitted in terms of like shape. You don't want those straight ones across the shoulders, especially for detection work, because our dogs are pulling into these harnesses.
Yeah. I'm curious. There's a hook at the top near the, like kind of where the collar would, like behind the shoulder blades. And then there's also one at the back by the base of the rib cage. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
That's displacement for weight pull. So like if you had, my recommendation, if you have a dog that's really going to pull into the harness, put it at the one that's the furthest back, because okay. That's going to displace all the pulling weight down the spine to the end of the harness. So the dog's pulling into it. Whereas if you have it higher up on the shoulders, you could see when the dog's pulling into it, it's going to pull the harness up.
Yeah.
At the chest piece. So if you have a dog that really drives into a harness, I'd say clip it on the back.
Nice. Okay.
Interesting. So usually at the end of our podcast, we've been forgetting, so you get this. I'm going to do my takeaways. One is I'm like already looking for the hydrated pumpkin to throw in my go bag. Because I basically have a Malinois that when we go on travel, he's like, and his food changes at all. He's like, oh, I must have diarrhea. The rest of them are labs. They're like, I can eat whatever. So that's one. The harness stuff is fantastic because that was my other ahas. I was listening to you talk about it. I had a set of harnesses for the bomb dogs and the drug dogs that would go across their scapulas. And literally, Dash got to the point where he'd see me pull out that harness and he would start ducking his head.
Oh.
Yeah, because he's like, I don't want to wear it. And then I went out and bought the really nice harness with the Y front and I sucked it up and it's a more of a tactical vest. And he's like, yep, I'll wear that one all day long. That was just really interesting.
Yep. And you could even have a Y front that's poorly fitted and your dog will still experience the same discomfort. That's why the fit is also important, because the same Y front is not going to fit all dogs. So I could give a good example, like Quest, for example. He has a huge chest. It's 32 and a half inches, I think, the last time I measured it.
Of course. I mean,
of course. It's so deep. So I can't just go like the rough wear front range harness, which works for most dogs that don't have a super deep chest. I cannot put that on him, because what happens is his chest is so deep that second strap starts to angle under his armpit and then go straight out to his back.
Oh,
because his chest has such a depth to it. So like the front does the Y, right? But everything else doesn't fit right. So that's why it's important to try it on the dog. Because even though it's like the best harness with the Y front for whatever you need, it still might be terrible for your dog.
Okay. So I might be like other listeners and I'm thinking, okay, I want Ronnie to see my dog in their harness. Is that something that you can do online?
Absolutely. You could always just send me a picture. So ideally you would want a dog sitting frontal. So I'd want to be able to see how that goes around the neck, down the chest. And then we would want somewhat like a stacked photo. The dog doesn't have to be in a perfect stack, but for idea standing from the side, so I could see how that falls on the body. And if it is a harness that is intended for the dog to pull into, you would also want a third shot from the dog standing on the side and a leash with a bit of tension, so we could see how that dog falls into the harness when the weight is pulled into it.
So is that through your Optimal Canine that we would do that, or how do we?
Yes, Optimal Canine.
Okay, so we'll have that in the show notes for sure and on our social medias too. My takeaway, oh man, I'm doing some things that I could do better. I'm not going to say that it's wrong because no one's died, but I can definitely do better. I'm excited about getting the bone broth powder that I'm going to add to my new little, you know, cup thing at the bottom. I'm so stoked about that. Like there's a purpose for that thing. And I'm thinking about the storage of my food and how I could have been so much better this summer. So that's a great learning opportunity for me. So you've taught me a lot again, Ronnie.
Again.
Knock it off, my brain. What are your takeaways, Ronnie? No, I want to hear Ronnie's takeaways. What do you want us to...
My takeaways, I need to stop saying just about my dog because they're phenomenal.
Yeah,
yes.
They are.
I was like, or because I'll have you guys come after me if I don't stop.
That's correct. We will send you lovely hate mail. the smiley faces on it. Yeah.
So passive aggressive hate mail. Perfect.
Yes. Yeah. We're good at that.
The best kind.
Yeah. Ronnie, thank you so much for spending some time with us. You guys, Ronnie's amazing. All of her contact information and everything is in the show notes. You can find her on Facebook. You can find her on the web. Is there anywhere else they can find you? Any other social media?
Yeah. So I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram in terms of me personally and for Perfectly Rawsome and Optimal Canine. I am also on TikTok only for Optimal Canine at this time. I'm still navigating the waters on how I want to create Perfectly Rawsome content for TikTok.
Oh my gosh. I obviously need to have a TikTok conversation with you.
It's a scary app. It scares me sometimes, but yes.
Okay. Your Perfectly Rawsome blog is amazing. So everybody go there. Oh my gosh.
Read many things. Yes. Thank you, Ronnie. I hope
you
have
guys.
A wonderful vacation. And everybody else, check out everything on the website and go train.
Canine Detection Collaborative.
We appreciate the time you spend with us. If you liked this episode, not only should you follow us so you don't miss the next one, but please also rate and review us in your favorite podcast app. For info on collaborating with us, go to caninedetectioncollaborative.com. That's K9detectioncollaborative.com, where you can find our socials and pick up our latest monthly freebie. Join us again to talk training in the next episode.